John Clayton.
Enough! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football. We do it every day at 4 o'clock with the professor, John Clayton, who joins us. Bob David Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
You know, we heard, we were just talking right before we came back on air about Jake Heaps is down there at the Pro Bowl, and he was on the air today talking about, you know, just talking to some players out there off the record about Pete Carroll and, you know, interacting with Pete as a coach out there for the NFC. And he said there were a couple of guys unsolicited, not in interviews, saying, you know, if I'm ever a free agent or I find a way to get free, I'd love to play for this guy. I guess that's one of the least surprising things I would hear out there, because I feel like the whole Pete's a college coach and that rah-rah stuff doesn't work at this level. I think that's long been washed away, and this looks like he looks like an appealing guy to play for across the league. Is that?
No question. I still remember back, particularly when he and John Snyder were building this team, you know, how the pass rushers around the league all wanted to come here. I mean, O.C. Umanyura being one, and, you know, got other guys that, you know, you look at it because, one, you can see it's a defense that if you're a pass rusher, you can do well with, both financially and also as far as plays, because it's set up to try to get sacks. And I think that you can see, you know, how much fun he creates for the players in the environment. And of course, I mean, the trade-off is, I mean, he works them hard. I mean, he asked them to really do a lot of stuff in practice, and they respond to it, but he makes it such a fun environment. And I think that you can see he's able to identify with the players. I mean, again, even though he's, what, 68 years old, yeah. I mean, here's a guy that is really young at heart and, you know, just knows how to work it. And I think that, you know, so much of what put his career over the top was going to USC, working with the young guys down there, seeing top talent, seeing how you can put teams together, you know, with his ability to see and put the systems out there and identify with the young guys in recruiting.
You know, you bring up a good point there, John. You look at his practices, I don't think other practices are that efficient. I mean, there's so much hustling and flying around, and that's something I think is different than other places. I remember hearing that about Belichick, too, that, you know, I believe it was McVay when he was coaching with Washington. They had like a joint practice with the Patriots, and you know, you just couldn't believe how much they got out of their practices. I think that's key, because you only get so much time on the field. And, you know, Pete, man, you see him out there hustling around from drill to drill. They get a lot of stuff done in practice.
They do. And, of course, I mean, that's the one thing. Bill Belichick is a little bit different, because it's still he, you know, at least embodies a lot of the Bill Parcells type of practices. And, you know, there's a lot more thinking and less action in those practices. But, I mean, it's well scripted. I mean, you know, you have guys, I mean, just about everybody's either doing something, but again, there's more time where the guys aren't using their physical abilities and running around. I mean, there's a lot more thinking type of things. Because I know when I watched, you know, particularly training camp practices and dual practices with the Patriots and the Giants and the Jets and all that stuff when Bill Parcells was there, I mean, it was so different, because there was just times where it's like, okay, the guys aren't really doing much as far as just, you know, working on things, but they're all working the mental part of it. And then he kind of coordinates everything like that. And that's why, you know, week to week, Bill Belichick can change almost anything that he's doing and make it work on the field. Where, you know, Pete is one that, you know, he gets the energy going. He keeps it going the same way. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the difference between, maybe a Doug Peterson type offense, you know, versus, say, Mike Holmgren's type offense, you know, because what Pete wants is execution. And remember how Mike Holmgren would not even have shotgun formations. He, you know, everything had to be behind center, and he was going at the, because he wanted that, you know, I want the precise way to get this done, where Pete has his system and he wants it to work.
Yeah, speaking of that and young coaches and everything, Kingsbury had, remember this last year going into the season, that he was going to give his players like a half an hour social media break or something like that? Yeah, I guess that worked out okay, right?
Well, I mean, in the 5-win season, you know, they won 5 and 5-1.
Maybe they would have only won 3 if he didn't do that.
Well, maybe, or maybe they would have won 9. I don't know. That to me was, because I was just thinking about Pete being, you know, people have been saying, well, he's old school, or they think he's, what, too old to change? It's ridiculous. I mean, he's one of those guys. But I think he might be more old school. I haven't heard anything about, like, phones and Twitter and stuff like that. But, you know, I feel like he's...
Well, yeah, but maybe another coach that's not been a descendant of Pete Carroll that, you know, has basketball games in their team meetings.
Yeah.
Basketball shooting things. I mean, you don't see much of that. I know when John Gruden came out here when he was, you know, with ESPN, and he actually watched that, he was just amazed, because it's like, wow, I've never seen that before. Now, Dan Quinn has obviously taken it down to Atlanta, and you saw Gus Bradley doing some of the same things in Jacksonville. But, you know, to have all the video stuff that they do, all the fun social media stuff that Pete is involved in with the players, I mean, yeah, it's just it's different. I mean, he's up to date.
Well, okay, so we saw Bill Cowher make the Hall of Fame and Jimmy Johnson in the Hall of Fame. Isn't Pete Carroll on the cusp of making it too?
Well, it still comes down to one thing, and this is going to be the Hall of Fame, which I'm very confident is going to happen. I mean, he's not going to make it unless they have a coaches category. Because, again, if you're putting Pete Carroll up against Richard Sherman, or Pete Carroll against Earl Thomas, or Pete Carroll up against Bobby Wagner or Russell Wilson, it's like he's going to lose. I mean, because, again, players always beat the coaches because, you know, it's a player-driven league. But I think that it looks like we're going to get that, because I know I've been the biggest advocate of the coaching category being separate, and thank heavens that David Baker, the head of the Hall of Fame, has listened and been very patient with me trying to, and there's others too that have wanted it too. I mean, the big one was Will McDonough. I mean, I just follow the lead that Will McDonough taught me, and now it looks like, I mean, if there's a coaches category, yeah, I would have to think, you know, after 5 years from his retirement, you know, Pete Carroll would have a good chance to be in the Hall of Fame.
What about Ken Norton Jr.? Do you think he'll get in there? I'm kidding, John. He's a popular punching bag for fans right now. Is it deserved? Is he a guy you think needs to adjust to what has happened out there? Is he the biggest part of the defense's problem?
No, I don't think he's a problem at all. In fact, I think he did a lot of adjusting, and Dave can, you know, jump in on this. I mean, they did more things this year than any other year. More blitzes, I mean, corner blitzes, safety blitzes, you name it, just because they just didn't have the pressure. And again, it's like, you know, Ken Norton Jr. can, you know, put the players out there, but he can't get what wasn't necessarily there. I mean, yeah, I mean, Jadeveon Clowney was a Pro Bowler. But again, he's not a big sack guy. And so the sack numbers, you know, just didn't go. Ziggy Ansah was kind of a no-show this year and probably not going to be back. I mean, Rasheem Green was starting to come on toward the end, but, you know, they just couldn't generate the sacks. And I mean, and I still go back, and this is what I think is such a fascinating thing for this Super Bowl, is I go back to last year, and you look at the 49ers, okay? They may have had three first-round picks, but they really couldn't rush the quarterback. And because they couldn't rush the quarterback, they only created 8 defensive turnovers. 8. And so now, here they come in, they get Nick Bosa, they trade for D Ford, and the next thing you know, they get 57 sacks. They're now the second best, one of the top defenses in the league. I mean, they were able to get pressure on the quarterback, and that's what it comes down to. You know, it, that almost no different, although it's a little bit of a different thing, but what you saw that John Snyder did back in 2013, you know, he goes out and he gets Cliff Averill, he goes out and he gets Michael Bennett, and the next thing you know, even though these guys weren't starters, they were paid decent money, but they just came in to rush the quarterback in passing downs, that this team had the 6th best defense in the history of the league.
How about Ken Norton as a Hall of Famer? Would he be borderline as a player? Because, you know, I know he won back-to-back Super Bowls with different teams, right?
Yeah.
Went from Dallas to San Francisco. He was all pro. He was a 3-time Pro Bowler. Played in 188 games. Sorry, I'm sorry, 191. Started in 188. Guy missed 3 games, 12 forced fumbles, 13 fumble recoveries, 5 picks, 12 and a half sacks.
Yeah, but I mean, he's never really had any real chance, I think, to get into the 25. You know, we eventually go from 25 to 15 to 10 to 5, mm-hmm. but he's never really had that chance. And I think you brought up the one stat that kind of works against him. As good as he was, and he was a good player on good teams, and when he moved from, you know, San Fran, and he moved from Dallas and all those different things, I mean, he was an impact player because, you know, kind of like on Deion Sanders, when he moved, all of a sudden, championship went from one city to the other. But the difference is only 3 Pro Bowls, and that's where you kind of pull things down, because it's not that the Pro Bowls get you into the Hall of Fame, but the more Pro Bowls you have, it tells you what the voting of the players were at that time. And so, you know, 3 Pro Bowls kind of puts it down. It's like, I know we had the conversation the other day about Julian Edelman. Somebody was asking, should he be a Hall of Famer because of the stuff he's done in the postseason? Well, I think he's only been selected to 1 Pro Bowl. Now, because of that, I know he probably could have made a few more because he was a Pro Bowl alternate a couple times. Like, he was the number one, I think, alternate this year. But, you know, he didn't get in the AFC, but there was no opening because nobody pulled out who was a wide receiver. But, no, I think that, you know, three Pro Bowls, it's like, well, not good enough. Because, I mean, you look at Luke Kuechly and the 7 out of 8 and what the 7 or so that Bobby Wagner's been through. Now you start talking about Hall of Fame-type numbers.
Hey, John, in free agency, who are the top pass rushers that are available that won't be franchised by their respective teams?
I'll be going through that tonight. But, I mean, Yannick Ngakoue, which I think he's going to get, he's going to get probably franchised because they really can't afford to lose him down in Jacksonville. I mean, you know, Robert Quinn with the Dallas Cowboys, you know, he's probably a $10 million guy. Maybe, you know, get some 3-year, $30 million deal. You know, Everson Griffin is a guy that I think that this team would be appealing to, but I think that he wants to stay in Minnesota because I thought maybe in this off somewhere close to training camp, instead of Jadeveon Clowney, they would trade for Griffin, but they didn't, unfortunately so, because now Griffin, you know, is one of the 8 Vikings in the Pro Bowl. So those are a couple names to watch. Now, again, they're kind of older, and again, what has to be you know, taken into account is that if they're going to cost $10 million, that could wipe out what might be a third-round compensatory pick for Jadeveon Clowney or a third-down compensatory pick for Jaron Reed, but you know, there's going to be enough guys that they can look at. I mean, because remember, I mean, you know, I know that it didn't work out on Ziggy Ansah because of the shoulder and all those different things, the labrum, and it just was so slow in coming back and couldn't lift and all that stuff. But again, you know, they did find Jadeveon Clowney. I think the key is right now finding somebody that, you know, finding a way to keep Clowney. And then finding somebody like a quick twitch type of 265-pound pass rusher like a Frank Clark. And I don't know if that's going to be in the draft because, you know, I don't think I would put past the idea that even though John Snyder likes to trade down, if you can maybe trade into the top 12 or 13 and get the third best pass rusher, now you're talking.
You don't want to bring Unique Ngakoue in here.
Just too tough for us Rabel to pronounce.
Broadcaster's nightmare.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Hey, John, what's the market like for Quentin Jefferson versus Jaron Reed? I heard Jake talking about this as well today. And he wasn't saying Reed and Jefferson are equal talents, that Reed certainly got more upside, but he feels like the market might be there for Jefferson because, A, he wouldn't be as expensive, and, B, he's a little more versatile.
Yeah, I would have to think it's probably between 4 and 6, somewhere in that neighborhood. Maybe it could be as low as 3.
Jefferson.
For Jefferson, yeah. Where I think, and again, I know that I'm showing disrespect to Jaron Reed.
Uh-oh.
I still say between 8 and 10.
Oh, he doesn't like that number.
No, I know. It's like, but I mean, I've been using that number now for, what, more than a month.
Yeah, that's why he doesn't like it. He's heard it.
Oh, you're the disrespectful one, John.
I'm the disrespectful. That would be me. So, but, you know, but the way I look at it is, okay, and, you know, that's one of, like, you know, I go every night, I have, you know, 2 or 3 projects that I'm always working on.
Oh, I thought you were going to say whiskeys.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, not a bad idea.
Yeah. All right, but, glass of wine, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like, you know, it's like, and so, like, and so I haven't had a chance because I was working on Pro Bowl stuff yesterday, and I was working on, you know, getting the complete list of the how many guys each team has on free agency, and also is updating the 2020, you know, trying to get a 2020 salary cap stuff in gear. So I was working on that. But tonight I wanted to kind of work more on the, you know, more on where the free agents are and seeing where I think you can see the breakdown. If you look at top 100s, you know, Jaron Reed falls somewhere in the 50s. Now, usually when you get into the 50s, that's now in that territory where you're not getting $10 million bucks because, you know, last year there was about 20 guys that got $10-plus million. This year there'll be more because it's a better class and you got a bunch of quarterbacks that are going to get good money. But when you start to talk about, you know, getting down in the 50, 58 range, now you're talking in that, you know, less than $10 million range. So not trying to be disrespectful for one of the top 50, 59 guys in free agency, which Reed would be, you know, it's still the numbers keep going down, and that's where I think it stays at about 8 to 10.
Hey, John, do we have an Antonio Brown? Apparently,
as the world turns,
he has guns. Antonio Brown update. He's holed up in his house, and he has guns.
Yeah, according to the warrant we read, they quoted it on TMZ saying he's been known to be confrontational with police, and he does have a concealed weapons permit and had a gun stolen in 2018. So approach him carefully. This is, I mean, we've talked about it and talked about it not ending well. And it, boy, we since then, it seems like every day there's some sort of development where he's screaming at kids or he's beating up the delivery drivers, and now he's holed up in his house. I don't even know what the question is. I don't.
Yeah, no. I mean, the question is, when is he going to get help? And I think, did you see the latest where his now you can call ex girlfriend said that you know, she kind of got out of there because you know, this is the one that I guess, you know, is being investigated by the league and all that stuff. You know, she's now out of there. He says he's got to get some help. He needs help. And so, yeah, I mean, I would worry. I mean, particularly when you start to think about the idea, it's like, I don't know how the police are going to try to get him to, you know, be served on his arrest warrant, because if they can't come, if he's not coming out of the house, then, you know, I don't think they're going to be breaking in with a guy with guns like that. But what you have to worry about is that could he do something really bad to himself? I hope not, but he needs help bad.
Is the belief around the league that this is a result of that perfect hit? I know a lot of people speculate, some joked way back, like, you know, when he was just being sort of petulant and you know, prima donna-ish, but mm-hmm. now people really seem to draw that conclusion. Is that just being too simple?
I think it's being too simple, yeah, because, again, it's like it's hard to, you know, imagine that, you know, one hit could cause this, but, I mean, certainly, I mean, you've seen, and, I mean, I'm sure Dave has, you know, gone around and see a lot of the players that he's played with, and some of them have gone a little bit goofy because of CTE and all that stuff, and you have to kind of fear for it, but I think that'd be too simplistic, I mean, to say that, you know, one big concussion type of hit, you know, changed him, because, again, we don't know when he really started to become, you know, the goofball that he is now. I mean, because, again, they hit it so well in Pittsburgh. I mean, you never heard the problems that Mike Tomlin had to go through with Antonio Brown. But you knew now we know there was years of problems. But when it started, and I still remember, you know, I was at the Steeler training camp the day, and I saw Drew Rosenhaus coming down from one of the offices at training camp at St. Vincent College, and he had just signed Antonio Brown to that $8 million a year contract. And at that time, Antonio was kind of a humble, quiet sixth round pick who hit it pretty big, and, you know, because they were trying to get a $10 million, one of the wide receivers was trying to get a $10 million contract and didn't get it, you know, they overpaid Antonio at $8 million, and now it turned out to be a bargain. But I don't know when he started to make that bad turn.
Hey, John, we were talking earlier about Chris Carson, and I think we all agreed that he's going into his fourth year. Let him play out that year and see what happens. But how would you approach? Let's say he has a good year, mm-hmm. really good year, and finishes, and, you know, minimal fumbles. I mean, what do you do with him? Because it's just not a trend to play or to pay running backs in this league right
well,
now.
Well, I mean, I think that you know, you have to go for what type of pay. Like, for example, I mean, you know, Derrick Henry, you figure that Chris McAllister, they're all going to be shooting for the $14 million. And, you know, you had Devontae Freeman and others, you know, getting in that $8 million range. I think if you're talking long-term type of deal, I think that at this stage, and being a seventh-round pick, you know, getting his first real big payday, I don't think he'd be too opposed to the $8 to $10 million. Let's put it this way. I don't think that he would be disrespectful. I would be disrespectful in saying that. But
okay.
No, I think in the you know, $8 to $10 million range. Now, again, we'll have to see, because each year it's going to go up, because the cap's going to go up. And if they get the CBA deal, which I think they will, I mean, it could go up significantly. But I think in the end, it's going to be probably you know, in that $8 to $10 million range. But I think that they could take the tack that they could put the franchise tag on him, because that still seems to be one of the things that running backs don't tend to like. But it's like, okay, because of the short careers of running backs, you know, now it's like, okay, we can keep him for 5 years, and then we'll see how it goes.
John, if you're a Vikings fan, are you excited to hear that Gary Kubiak will be the Minnesota's offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think you can be, okay. Because, again, I mean, he's a good coach. He was doing a lot more stuff, I think, with the team, than particularly the offense, than he was even given credit for. But, I mean, he worked so well with just about everybody. And, you know, John Elway's big, you know, well, other than bad quarterback decisions a couple times, you know, his biggest mistake was letting Gary out of there, because, you know, Dave can vouch for what friendship the two guys had. I mean, you're talking about the starter and the backup, and they remain good friends, and you know, they helped each other out. But, you know, he ends up going to Minnesota with a fresh start. He's out there with his son, and I think it's a good fit, because, again, he works very well with quarterbacks. He's a good play caller. I mean, he trusts his offensive line coach Rick Dennison, and so, no, I think it's a good fit.
Yeah, Kubiak and him and Dennison have been together since 95. And I think what happened was Fire Marshal Bill came into Denver, mm-hmm. and he, you know, I think John Elway, that's when Kubiak came in there. And because he'd backed up Elway, right?
Yeah.
A number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he brought him back in as a coach. So, yeah, definitely. Great, great guy. I think he's done a pretty good job. Didn't he have some kind of like a mini stroke or something?
Yeah, he
like
did.
That?
And but I, here's a misinterpretation I think is there, and this tells you what a good guy that he is. You know, for, I don't know what it is with John Elway, but if you have a if you don't go to the Super Bowl, I mean, he wants coaches fired. And so, I mean, he wanted the tight ends coach. He wasn't going to renew Wade Phillips, even though Wade had done such a good job. And then, you know, here was, you know, Gary, and he didn't so and didn't want Rick Dennison on the staff. And so Gary just took the position because he did have the stroke. It's like, well, I'm getting out of it for health reasons. Well, he really didn't. I mean, he got out of it because he didn't. He was loyal to his coaches, and it's like, well, I'm not going to fire him. So if that's the case, I'll take the hit. I'll step down, and I'll take my chances on wherever it's going to be. And of course, you know, they did remain such good friends that Gary, you know, worked in the organization, helped out John Elway, and in that. But I still think they made a mistake. John did by letting him, you know, get out of the organization because he's too valuable.
John, I thought this went really well. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Okay, how about that? That'll be good.
All right, we'll talk to you then.
All right.
There he is, the Professor John Clayton with us every day at 4 o'clock. A reminder, our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. All right, coming up next, can 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan tell the future? We're going to find out when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Man, I was so excited to sweep the dial that I promoted it there. That's coming up in 15 minutes. I just wanted to whet the appetite of our listeners there.
Bob, you can go to Roman.com and find drugs for that.
Drugs for...
announcing
I'm not
things
even going to pursue it, man.
Prematurely.
It's going to go the wrong way. It's going to go the wrong way.
I don't care.
Meanwhile. So, yeah, we'll sweep the dial. We'll do that in about 15 minutes and tell you if 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan can tell the future. Meanwhile, the question should have been, are the Seahawks wasting Russell Wilson's prime? Now, we talked about this in regards to national people saying that, and we had Jeff Schwartz on saying, you know, Pete's old. He's not going to change, and they need to modernize the offense. We're really not capitalizing on what Russell brings to the table, and nobody closer to Russell than Jake Heaps. In fact, he's out there at the Pro Bowl with him right now. So he's out there celebrating his Pro Bowl, and they worked together, and he had this opinion he shared on their ability to utilize Russell Wilson and if they've done it effectively.
But since 2017, without question, I think that this team has squandered Russell Wilson's prime and opportunity to make Super Bowl runs. And you look at this, you look at this team, and they've been through a rebuilding and retooling process, but how have they rebuilt? How have they gone about this process? And you look at the New England Patriots, and that's a team that I'm going to echo the entire offseason, and you guys might be tired of hearing me say this, but what Bill Belichick has did during his career was he came in as a defensive-minded head coach, wanted to play great defense, run the football, ball control offense, Tom Brady. You are going to be a game manager in some aspects, still be a great, phenomenal quarterback in this league, but your job is to manage the game and constantly put us in good situations. At some point, he recognized that Tom Brady was in the prime of his career, was elite as elite gets, and built his team around that quarterback to help them win Super Bowls as they transitioned and moved away from all of their stalwart defensive talent.
What do you think? Does he have a point?
No. I'm sorry. I disagree, man.
No.
Well, I mean, has he? They've totally squandered it?
Just in this time frame. He says since 2017.
Well, yeah, and I'll go back and try to find when I'm done with doing Sackapalooza or Sextravaganza.
It's got a new name.
Well,
he's renamed
three. Jim called it Sackapalooza yesterday. Oh. Kind of stuck. But yeah, I mean, I just remember going through and doing the formula for him is for Russell and the team winning, not necessarily for his success. I'm not saying that Russell can't handle it, but for this team has been, they win much more when Russ isn't throwing it all the time. So, I mean, what do you mean? How, in what way did you squander him?
And maybe he's talking about what they've put around him,
yeah,
perhaps?
Maybe. I mean,
you know, forcing him to deal with offensive lines that have been leaky at best for the most part. Or
I would say this, though, going into this season, maybe in the last season, receiver. I mean, Lockett has been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've always thought, yeah, you kind of make those guys better. But, you know I was kind of on the Jaren Brown bandwagon for a while there just because they only threw to him a few times.
It was pretty empty, that bandwagon.
Yeah. You couldn't have been on there that long.
Well, in 18, they threw it to him 19 times.
Yeah,
and he caught 15 of them.
Yeah.
And he scored like 5 touchdowns. So I was like, well, let's see what happens. And I know Schottenheimer was talking about him going into camp, but you know, if maybe you're saying you don't put the kind of weapons around him, but it seemed to me like Edelman, some of those guys were pretty underdog type of players. I mean, Edelman was like a quarterback in college.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason he made the NFL is because he switched. So
and they made use of that undersized, quick guy, the Wes Welkers, yeah. Edelman, Amendola, they just all fit this little role that they had there for him.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what Jake means there. I know he always means well. I know that. But and he does a great job, but I guess I don't really see it that way. Maybe that's just a little frustration coming out of that camp, you know, after. But I mean, would it be throw more? If you look at the history of this team since he's been here, when he has to throw more, what 2017, you used him quite a bit, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was responsible for every single touchdown except for one by J.D. McKissic, and they went 9-7 and missed the playoffs. So, and they were talking about that on their show, that in the afternoon show, about what's the best version of Russell Wilson. This is this version right here, where, you know, he had a good running game. He's running around making plays. He's making the most of what he has physically, and he's a winner. And he's become such a winner and a guy that, you know, the spirit, he's a leader. The spirit of Russell Wilson just permeates through this team, and that's who they are. So, yeah, I'm not so sure exactly, but I guess I could see my way clear that you haven't over the last few years gotten, like, the best, most top-end receivers here.
Yeah,
but they made moves that didn't work.
They drafted three receivers this year.
But they haven't worked out.
Yeah, they invested in Jimmy Graham. It didn't work.
That was for Russell.
And Percy Harvin was a big investment. It didn't work. So they made attempts.
This year they got Metcalf. It didn't work with Jennings in the fourth round. We'll see with Ursua. A lot of people
hasn't worked with Brown.
Don't you think Graham was 100% for Russell?
I mean, for the red zone.
It was for that in the red zone.
They were struggling badly in the red zone before he got here. And they just never seem to figure out how to really utilize him.
Yeah, I'm with Dave on this one. I love Jake too, but I think he's way off base. I think if this was some guy back on the East Coast, we'd just be like, what is he talking about? That's how I feel about it.
Well, and he's not alone. Like I said, Jeff Schwartz said the same thing.
Yeah,
a lot of people are saying that.
I know a lot of people are saying it, and I think they're all wrong saying it. I mean, do you think Schneider and Carroll sit over there and go, hey, you know what, John? You know, let's go over and have a pop over at Dino's, and let's talk about how we're going to squander Russell Wilson's career. I mean, that's just not happening.
No, I don't think
they're trying to do
it. He's not implying they're doing it intentionally. Like, let's screw this guy
over. I know
that, Bob.
I know. I'm just trying to pound my point home here.
Okay, pound away, Jim.
They're just not. They're not doing that. They're trying to build the best team possible.
Well,
and I'm with
they're getting players that they think will work, right, Jim?
I know.
Is that what you?
Yeah, I just.
Well, how about this? Well, why don't you just isolate the offensive line and say, you know, maybe instead of going bargain basement with guys that were never really good, Jamarcus Webb and Bradley Sowell and Luke Jokel, and trying to find these reclamation projects, Robert Gallery, you know, I mean, all these investments they made with guys that didn't pan out anywhere else, yet we're going to bring them here.
Yeah, and yet he would tell you that the Fluker worked out and that Yapati has worked out to a degree.
Well, and then they haven't drafted.
For the money you put into Yapati, he was okay.
But they've drafted in the first round 2 tackles, right, since they've been here?
Carpenter.
Well, 3, Okung.
Efetti.
Carpenter and Efetti.
Okung was before Russell, but yeah.
Before Russell, yeah, but not before.
But
Pete,
since Russell,
John.
It's been Efetti and, and Carpenter.
Yep. Yeah, and it just hasn't worked out. I mean, they've tried, but they haven't worked out. And I think, you know, they have a different theory on where to draft guys. And I know this, that their board is really a lot different than everybody else's, but it's worked out. It hasn't worked out in the first round for whatever reason. But yeah, I don't see how. I mean, they spent the money on him, so they'd have to be really stupid to be squandering it. If they spend $35 million on Russell Wilson and then. You know, and maybe if he took a little bit more of a hometown discount, they could buy a couple of extra receivers.
Well, they're in good spot now. They got almost $60 million coming up next year in salary cap space, so they're doing just fine. But I guess what I would say in terms of using him, I'm with you. I don't think he needs to throw the ball more often. He needs 30 attempts, 33, 35, nothing like that. I think it's where he throws. I think they could adjust that. I think they do get really conservative in certain situations. Again, you've seen second and 10, second and 9, and they're just running the ball right into the back of the offensive line. They gain a yard, and then they get into that we're off schedule situation. It's third and long. It feels like that happens a lot, where maybe you get a little more aggressive earlier in the downs. You're not throwing it more often. It's just a matter of where you're choosing to throw the ball.
Yeah, and you know, and Jimmy Graham, I would say if they got that for Russell, there was times where he, I thought, squandered that opportunity. Because look, Graham, the reason why you brought him in here, I mean, there was a number of times where he was man to man, single covered, and I'm just like, if you're in the red zone, that's why you brought him here. Throw it up to him. Throw it up to Jimmy Graham.
He's going to catch it or it's going to be incomplete.
Yeah, there's a number of times where that didn't happen. So, I mean, you can point fingers right and left. And
you could also argue, you know, shoring up the defense will help take some of the pressure off of Russell not having to score 28, 30, 33 points a game to win a game.
I mean, how'd they win their only Super Bowl?
Yeah, it was their defense. I mean, Russell, too. I don't want to completely dismiss him as some have. He certainly played a huge part in that. But yeah, it goes a long way to help him in the entire offense and take pressure off everybody on that side of the ball if you can stop the opposition or at least slow them down.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And I'd also, all along, I've always thought, okay, Russell Wilson, everybody knows he's the best asset you have, and so protect him. Get guys who can pass protect as well as run block, and yet that seems to be a lost art. As far as I can tell, it's kind of funny to me, you know, how you can...
At least out here...
Well, you're a good run blocker, but you can't pass block and vice versa. So,
yeah, and that's
I would like to see better pass protection, but this business about his talent, his prime being squandered, it's all hooey, really. I mean, it's just... it just makes no sense. I've never even used that word. I don't even know where I came up. I was going to say BS, and then I went with
that.
Hooey.
Sounds like a word older than
yeah,
you.
I don't know. This kind of crap just bugs me.
All right. Yeah. Well, sorry, Jake. You're bugging Jim with your hooey. Coming up now, can 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan tell the future? I got you guys primed and ready on the edge of your seat, wondering, can he tell the future? You're going to find out next when we sweep the dial with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Here's Zion stepping back, pulling the trigger, and hitting a three. There's a lob to Zion, and he finishes over DeRozan. Here's Zion for three. Hit it again. They want Zion to get it. Here he is. And Hurdle blocked it. Zion gets it back and finishes. 10 points in just over a minute for Zion Williamson. Zion gives it up. Gets it back. Here he is again. Got it again. Gets it back. Zion for four for four. Welcome to the NBA.
About that debut last night, he was 2 for 3 with 5 points going into the fourth quarter last night. He hits 4 3-pointers, puts up 17 in that quarter. They lost.
Yeah, I got home last night. Mikey had it on, so I was watching. And you watched him at first, and he was just turning it over. Didn't look that great. And then...
Well, they're really monitoring his minutes.
Yeah, it was... He just kept... I didn't think he had range like that.
Well, that's why I was just going to ask you guys.
Four on threes.
You guys are bigger college basketball fans than I am. So was he a three-point shooter at all at the college level? Did I miss a meeting?
Don't remember that.
Of a slasher, breakaway guy, good defensive guy. I mean, I think he could shoot. You'd see that every once in a while. But it was always a little out of place. But this, and I'm seeing the Elias Sports Bureau says his 22 points are the most by a player in his NBA debut while playing fewer than 20 minutes.
Yeah, 18 minutes. And then it was weird. They came back. They came all the way back. They went ahead of the Spurs on one of his threes. And then the last 5 minutes of the game, he was on the bench because they're monitoring his minutes because of that knee injury.
Yeah, so. I saw the interviews with him and the coach after the game where they just said, listen, this is a long-term commitment. And nobody wanted to take him out except for the medical staff that said, get him out. Yeah. Like he was apparently arguing with the coach, and the coach was basically like, it's what we got to do, which is smart. I don't blame him. But they said they had seats available, that they had more seats sold when Anthony Davis made his return, and that you know, I don't know what's going on out there, but the building exploded in the fourth quarter, and I would imagine the next home game, whenever that is, will be probably filled to the rafters.
I've loved this kid ever since when, I think was it when he blew his shoe out.
Yeah.
And hurt himself. And then,
it was a bad day for Nike.
And everybody was telling him, don't play anymore. And he's like, why would I not play anymore? Mm-hmm. I love my teammates. I love playing here. And he went out and played. And I just love that. I feel like he's doing it for the right reason. If you do it for money, it's not going to work out. But if you do it because you love to play, you're going to have a successful career.
My guy, Hal Howell, 85 versus their guy. He's going to go inside and break out. He won't let him out. Watch.
Green Bay broke up the shutout, but San Francisco was still in control.
Redner just held him the whole way.
Two flags came down.
Kyle Shanahan apparently told a ref during the NFC Championship game that his receiver would get held on the next play. And that's what you just heard there.
Same ref who called the hold?
I don't. Did he make the call?
Yes.
I assume he did.
Yes, he did. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so he told him to watch out for it. And then, you know, that you can influence these guys a fair amount, you know, by telling them what to look at and this is what's happening. But
especially if you say, watch, it's coming up on this next play.
Yeah.
And then he sees it.
Well, it's smart of him. I mean, because those guys are looking at a lot of different things, and sometimes they just miss calls.
Yeah, and plant the seed.
Yeah, exactly.
Water it throughout the game. That's how it works, Jim.
I probably would. If I was that ref, I would have probably been going, yeah, that might have been a hold, but I'm not going to call it anyway because he just told me to look for it.
That's very petty. It's very petty of you,
well,
Jim.
Well, I know, but that's how I roll.
That's how you roll. I roll in a really petty way.
And then Jim would go over to him and say, yeah, I saw it. I'm not going to call it.
Then he'd go, you know, I should have called that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I might have screwed up. Go, Cougs.
Go, Cougs.
Play three. Yes, sir! Oh, man! 40! Outstanding. Kobe driving again. Good! Oh, you're kidding me! The Kings have 19. Clay has 29.
Get it to him again. He's got it. His three.
Have you ever seen anything like it?
How about that? That's 5 years ago. Klay Thompson put up 37 points in a single quarter against the Sacramento Kings. 13 of 13 from the field, 9 of 9 from three, and then 2 of 2 from the free throw line.
You know,
wow.
I always talk about baseball being one of the hardest things to hit a pitch. I think that maybe the hardest skill thing to do, maybe golf, you know, hitting that little white ball that far away, that close to the hole, all that. But some of those, especially the three-point, we had this three-point shooting contest over at Dory's house for the NFC-AFC championship. And when you can just consistently hit from that far away, now I know that the rim is twice as big as the ball. Our coach would always pull it out. You know, here's two balls, you know, that would fit right inside
as a reason to have more of an arc on it.
Yeah, and also just, hey, it's bigger than you think, and, you know, when you're far away. But still, when a guy just can consistently, he went 13 for 13?
Yeah, in one quarter.
One quarter.
Just from the field, I mean, that was
but
all
nine for
over
nine from three.
9 for 9 from 3. And the other thing about in the NBA, going to games, the first time I went, I was like, usually in college, in high school, certainly, you get the ball, you turn, you look at the basket, you jump, you shoot. Those guys, the catch and release is so fast. It's like they practice so much, they know exactly where it is. So it was very impressive by Klay. Is that more fun watching somebody go on a streak like that or like a big monster dunk or something like that you'd see from Zion Williamson?
That streak. Dunks are, I'm like, they're pretty, I mean, they happen almost every other play. I'm not going to say it's pedestrian, but it has to be something really spectacular to get you up out of your seat on a dunk versus something like that where you're like, it's just one blow after another, and you're just going, my God, another one? 9 3-pointers? 9 1/4? Yeah, you're living for his next possession. Every time he touches the ball, you're like, is he gonna sink another one versus a singular dunk? Yeah. I'll take that any day.
Yeah, and it was against the Kings, and I think he ended up with 50 points because he didn't play in the fourth quarter.
Boy, he really stunk it up those other quarters, didn't he?
But, yeah, he had a game, too. I'd forgotten. He had a game where he had 60 points in his career. So
this guy's a hell of a shooter,
he's
man. About,
he's going to turn 30 next month, and as you probably know, Bob, did you hear that he was over there at Washington
State? I did. I heard you got emotional.
He went out, he kissed the logo.
Did you watch it?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I'm saving it up.
Saving it up?
Yeah.
Have a good cry?
Well, I'm waiting for everybody to be out of the house, because I'll probably be tearing up.
Sit down with a box of tissue.
And my kids will be like, what are you crying about? Oh, I'm crying about Clay.
Bob, if you were going to go and kiss the logo, would you take wet wipes out there first?
Yes.
You'd probably see me with a hazmat suit, maybe a beekeeper helmet on or something like that.
You know, guys are blowing their nose out there on the court.
Yeah, that wouldn't...
You wouldn't do it?
There'd be some of these Clorox wipes first. There'd be a cleaning going on.
Bob
there.
Does a full wipe down.
Yes.
For those listeners that don't know.
Yeah, the keyboard, the mouse, the buttons, the mic, the headphones, every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it has to go.
Stay healthy?
Yes.
Pretty healthy.
Pretty much. All right, coming up, we told you about this. We had a really good conversation with Mariners pitcher Marco Gonzalez earlier today. We asked him what he thinks of the Astros cheating scandal. How does he approach a season where his GM and his manager are basically saying, yeah, it's not going to be great in terms of wins. It's about the youth. How does he feel about all that? Take a listen. That's coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.